single ones, but yeah, two different ones.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation Economic Development. It's Wednesday, April 17th. We have a packed agenda. I hope we're going to be able to move through quickly. We're going to be in sort of a random order, and rather than tell you all of it, I think we'll just move through. One announcement to start. House Bill 2016 will not be heard today. And we're going to start with a work session, possible reconsideration work session on House Bill 2725. So open that work session on House Bill 2725. Representative Gorsuch.
Mr. Chairman, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on HB 2725.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2725. The motion is not debatable. Is there any objection to the motion? I don't see any. The rules are suspended. Representative Gorsuch.
Mr. Chairman, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2725 was sent to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gorsuch. Moves to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2725 was sent to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. And the measure is once again before the committee. Representative Gorsuch.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2725 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch moves House Bill 2725 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? I don't see any. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative
Lively? Aye.
Representative
Kikuan?
Aye. Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Bent?
No.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Motion having received the required majority is declared adopted. House Bill 2725 goes on to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. Close the work session on House Bill 2725. And open a work session on House Bill 2945. You'll remember we had extensive testimony on House Bill 2945, a number of possible amendments. I would like to say that both the dash twos and the dash three amendments that we have discussed, I think, represent good progress. Unfortunately, I think it's fair to say that neither of them have satisfied all of the stakeholders. I, for one, recognize the progress and appreciate the work that's gone on, and have been in contact with the chair of the Rules Committee. I think there is some potential to come a little closer to bring those stakeholders together, and I'm going to hope that we're able to move the dash two amendments and give the Rules Committee a chance to continue work on the bill. So. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2945.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2945. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2945 as amended to the Committee on Rules without recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2945 as amended to the Rules Committee without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Representative Benz.
Only to say that I understand that Representative Kennemer is in agreement with this process. How's that?
Thank you, Representative Benz. I have communicated with Representative Kennemer, and I concur with that description. Thank you. Any objections, Representative Gorsuch?
No objections. I just wanted to point out that hopefully as this bill moves along, they'll be able to bring, as you said, the stakeholders in. I know there's some questions about the involvement of cities and Metro in the process, so hopefully that will happen as well.
Thank you, Representative Gorsuch. Further discussion? See any objections? Don't see any. The motion is adopted. House Bill 2945 goes to the Rules Committee without recommendation. All right, open a work session on House Bill 2277. Troy, could you please remind us?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2277, the Dash 4 amendments are before us. I'm going to read a description of the Dash 4 amendments. Dash 4 amendments replace the original text of the measure with a framework for an updated report or study on set of tires by the Oregon Department of Transportation and narrows the scope of social, economic, and environmental impacts of banning set studded tires, requires the department to study and report on the anticipated annual cost of alternative measures that road authorities may implement to maintain safe driving conditions as a result of the ban on studded tires, a review of recent studies conducted in other states regarding the frequency of crashes as a result of the ban on studded tires and the costs associated with increase or reduction in frequency. The social and economic environmental language is removed from the amendments.
Thank you. So the dash four amendments represent the current thinking on the study that I think will help us consider the route forward on studded tires. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Representative Cameron?
Mr. Chair, there's still a referral to Ways and Means on
there
this.
There is. Other discussion? I don't see any. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2277.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves the dash four amendments to House Bill 2277. Is there any discussion of the motion? I don't see any objections. I don't see any. The motion is adopted, and the amendments are adopted. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2277 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2277 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion of the motion? Any objections?
Yeah.
Let's go with discussion first. Representative Parrish?
Thank you. I guess I just have concern about the fiscal. I think it's important to go through and study this, but, you know, we're hearing a lot about tight budgets right now, and there's a lot of other things that I know we prioritize things, but I think there's a lot of things that are frontline services, and the Human Services Committee is meeting right now, and I know they're strapped for money, and I think as a matter of priority, I have a hard time with a $221,000 fiscal in a time when we're not delivering frontline services to people in need. And so while I appreciate this coming forward, you know, one of the other pieces of data I was also able to ascertain from some folks in the industry was that the majority of their tires on the road right now really are studless tires. And so I think the impact is probably less than we need. And with almost a quarter million dollar fiscal, I'm not going to be able to support that.
Thank you. Representative Cameron, did you have a comment or just, okay.
No.
No problem. Representative Doherty.
This is just a comment and something down the road when this bill is looked at is for those of us who have worked all over the state and had to drive everyone from Lake County to, you know, all over, has any, and this is just a suggestion for down the road with the study, has anyone ever looked at studded snow tires on a regional basis as opposed to statewide? And the reason is when I traveled in Lake County and those, there was a different sort of terrain and a different sort of weather than here in the metro area. So it's just a comment. It's just a thought that whether people had ever looked at this on a regional basis. So for studded snow tires.
Thank you, Representative Doherty. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, now you gave me some more time to think about it.
I'll take it back. It's time to go.
Yeah, just move the bill. I just think based on other things that I've got issues with Department of Motor Vehicles and ODOT, our priority should be spent more towards our customers, and I'd rather see that kind of money spent there. But I'll be a no. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lively?
No,
sorry. I thought you were seeking recognition. Okay. Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you're the support of this particular solution to this challenge. Studded snow tires are incredibly important to people in my district. I'm sure I could not support a fee for studded snow tires in the absence of something that suggests that such a fee would be necessary. I don't think it is necessary in my area for reasons having to do with a lack of flight traffic. Of course, the funds for this study will come from the gas tax and from the Department of Transportation, and thus dedicated funding would be used for this purpose. That's my understanding. And I'm hopeful that that the study would result in an affirmation of the value of studded snow tires to those of us in my district. So I'll be supporting the motion.
Thank you.
And Bill.
Thank you. I would just say before we call the roll that the thing that attracts me about this is the idea of gathering good data. There is a fiscal. It does go to Ways and Means, so we'll have that examination and discussion amidst the other priorities. But $220,000 is a significant amount, but we also heard some pretty compelling testimony about the many millions of dollars that studded tires are estimated to have in terms of an impact. So we'll have that discussion in Ways and Means, and I'm hopeful that that we'll get some good data from a study. With that, would you please call the roll?
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Daugherty?
Yes.
Representative Lively?
Yes.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Fence?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye. And the motion is adopted. And I confess we moved it so quickly. That was onto the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So the motion carries. House Bill 2277 heads to the Ways and Means Committee. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2277. Open the work session on House Bill 2657. Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2657, we're working with the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments clarify process required before local government amends or changes comprehensive plan designation or zoning classification for land that is planned or zoned for industrial use. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are in possession of the Dash 2 amendments, fiscal, revenue, and rescinding the subsequent to land use, committee on land use.
Very good. So the Dash 2 amendments are the ones that are before us. Any discussion on that amendment? Let's see. Representative Gorsuch?
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the Dash 2 amendments for House Bill 2657.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2657. Any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any objections to the motion? Not seeing the motion carries. The Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2657 are adopted. Representative Gorsuch?
Mr. Chair, I move we move House Bill 2657 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch moves House Bill 2657 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Betts.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say that I appreciate the efforts that have been made to make this bill work better. This is a close call for me. The reason I'll be voting against the amendment is because I still think it's imposing an obligation upon an owner of the land that is a little more than I'm willing to support. On the other hand, I understand the value of industrial land, and I don't want it to be slip out of that category without appropriate process. However, we have a land use planning process already, and I think many of the things that are contained in this bill would already be required to be considered under our current land use policy. So, again, I want to say I understand what's trying to be done with this bill. I agree with the goal, not necessarily the method, so I'll be no.
Thank you, Representative Benson. And may I say, I don't think there's anyone who is a more vocal proponent of industrial lands and defender of them, so I appreciate the comments. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Chair. I also won't be supporting this measure. I think the intent behind it is an excellent one. It's a realization and an understanding, I think, that most on the committee have, most in this body have, of a lack of usable industrial land in the state. However, I would remind us, that in a state with somewhere around 65 million acres of land, we have less than 2% of that within UGBs, much, much less percent of that zoned for industrial. In my opinion, the problem is not supply, it's the constraints we've put on it. And in my opinion, this would create yet an additional constraint, not solving the problem, but further harming a land use system, which has become very difficult to use for the average business, the average individual. Person just wants to have land, be able to operate their business, buy and sell it. I am seeking ways on the Land Use Committee and on this committee to make that easier for individuals and small businesses to operate in the state. I think this makes it more difficult for them to operate in the state, and I won't be supporting for that reason.
And Representative Davis, other comments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cameron.
The referral to land use has been taken off?
That's correct.
Why do I sit on land use? Why do we have a land use committee?
Representative, I'm going to assume that that's a rhetorical question.
I'll be a no.
Thank you. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Campbell?
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Daugherty?
Yeah, aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Aye. Motion having received the required majority is declared adopted. House Bill 2657 goes to the floor with due pass recommendation. Representative Doherty, would you carry?
Yes.
Representative Doherty will carry. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2657 and open a public hearing, our first of the day, on Senate Bill 612.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Senate Bill 612 requires Department of Transportation to provide expedited titling services upon request by vehicle dealer, directs department to adopt rules establishing criteria and procedures for providing expedited services, specifies fee of $100 for expedited title service.
Thank you. We have Daryl Fuller and Amy Joyce. Sign that, please.
That was a tongue twister. Mm.
We have to get used to saying Senate bills now. That's only House bills.
It's your bill there.
That's this lady's thing.
Fair's fair.
Mr. Chair,
I think it's proponents first.
Well, everybody's a proponent here today. Senate Bill 612 is requested at the request of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association. Fairly simple bill that I've been working with Representative Nathanson on. It's a customer service bill. Essentially, those of you that have ever purchased anything online, you know that you can have standard shipping or you can have express shipping if you pay a little bit more. I don't know if any of you guys buy anything on eBay. I don't. My wife buys a lot on eBay, so I have some experience with this. But we can typically pay a few more dollars and get something a little bit quicker. Now, if you buy a vehicle and you need to get the title right away, you don't have a way to do that. It takes DMV about 3 weeks to process a title, and that's a pretty quick turnaround time. We have no complaint as dealers with the work that DMV is doing. But there are occasions where somebody will pay cash for a vehicle. They want the title right now because they're getting ready to move. They're getting ready to go on a big vacation, and they want to put the title in a safe deposit box if they're buying a big RV. There are just times when they need a title a little bit quicker than 3 weeks. DMV can't help them. So what we've requested in Senate Bill 612 is that DMV create an expedited title process. And in order to do that, there needs to be a fee attached to it because it's going to be some extra work for DMV. And in fact, in working with DMV, we don't want lots of people using this process. We wanted to create a price point that made it expensive enough that people would only do this if they really needed it right away, so we didn't have too many people taking cuts to the front of the line, if you will, in the DMV's normal process. So we came upon a $100 fee. It's just a guess in terms of whether that's an appropriate fee or not. We don't know how many people are going to use this service. So we've came up with a good estimate at $100 that it would be a high enough price point that not a lot of people would use it. It would definitely generate enough money to pay DMV in order to create that process. And if you look at the fiscal and the revenue, the estimates on it are that it is actually going to generate more income than it's going to cost DMV to implement the program. So it actually creates a little bit of a profit. It is not a complete cost recovery. And again, we're not looking for cost recovery because if it was cost recovery, you may get too many people wanting to use it. So we're okay that the cost of the program is a little bit less than the revenue that it generates.
So let me interrupt just for a second to make sure I understood the way you said that. It's not a complete cost recovery. In fact, it's more than
cost recovery.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's more than a cost recovery. It will generate more income than it costs to do the program. So it will give DMV a little bit more money to spend in a customer service area. And in fact, you've got a bill in this committee that you're going to have a work session on a little bit later that you heard earlier this session. That is a good customer service bill that costs a little bit of money, and the additional revenue from this bill will actually cover the cost of the other bill that you're going to hear a little bit later on, and you still have a little bit of money left over. So this turns out to be a win-win for everybody. There's no opposition to the bill that we're aware of, and it's just a good customer service bill that will allow a small number of people that need to get a title right away an opportunity to do that, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Joyce, would you like to go first, or do you want us to take questions beforehand?
It's the pleasure of the chair.
Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Fuller? Let's hear from you first, okay. And then we'll probably have questions.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, handed out a brief piece of written testimony, and Mr. Fuller did a good job describing what the bill will do, basically expediting title requests if folks meet certain criteria and pay the $100 fee in addition to the base title fee. The DMV, in looking at this, projects probably aiming at a 5-day turnaround rather than the current, where we're at about a 19 or 20-day turnaround for titles. It's really unknown how many folks will take advantage of this service. And I did want to point out that the bill allows for expedited titling, not expedited registration. And in talking with Mr. Fuller, my understanding is that's very intentional. That's the way he intends the bill to read. So just to put that on the record. And the cost of the bill and the any additional revenue generated that's expected from the bill are not highway funds, and so they're both costs and revenues track in that fashion. And that's fine.
Very good. Questions? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Could you talk about what time frames we're dealing with? Maybe I missed that. So currently it takes how long, and under the expedited, we presume it'll take how long?
Chair Reed and Representative Davis, currently it varies, you know, week to week, month to month, but title turnaround is in the neighborhood of 19 to 20 days, and that's actually it's right at or maybe a day over our key performance measure for titles. The expectation on expedited would be a 5-day.
Okay. Very good. Any others? Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So it's a philosophical issue for me that government should kind of operate like a Red Robin and everyone gets served the same and has a good experience. And so I have concerns about a process when we heard last week that you're short 17 to 20-some people because we're ripping folks in the DMV, and this gets somebody, even if it's a small handful of people, it does jump them to the front of the line. Are you anticipating that you're going to hire someone who specifically does this? Because if you're already short folks, and then we're going to offer this as a service, but you're not actually going to add any FTE to do the service, and you're charging someone a fee, I guess I'm a little concerned about how you're going to accomplish that and get that done with the same amount of staff, or actually a reduction in staff, given the testimony we heard in a different bill earlier about long lines at the DMV and operating hours, et cetera. And can you speak to that?
Chair Reed and Representative Parrish, I believe the idea would be shift existing resources to accommodate this this new activity.
Can I follow up?
I thought I had an FTE.
And just as a side note, any sense on why there were two nays on the Senate side? Any sense on why they were opposed to the bill? Senator Johnson, Senator Wisit.
Chair Reed and Representative Parrish, you'd have to ask Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, Senator Betsy Johnson indicated that she opposed the bill because she didn't believe in providing additional government services to somebody who could pay more than somebody who paid less. Which, and I understand that from our perspective, we're looking to help DMV be more customer service friendly in those circumstances where somebody does need a title quicker. I mean, they have no option to do that. This is a relatively small number of people. I thought, and I'll look here to see if I have it here in my notes, but I was under the impression that the fiscal or the revenue statement listed a FTE for this, but I could be mistaken about that.
Thanks. Thank you.
It does. The one I'm looking at has a 0.75 FTE for 13-15 and a 1 FTE for 15-17.
Yeah, that sounds correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is an additional staff for it.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
But I just heard you say that's not net new. That's a shift of existing resources.
Chair Reed and Representative Parrish, I apologize. I guess I was mistaken. I didn't anticipate speaking to a fiscal in this committee.
Okay.
So.
Representative Parrish, I have to say, I have not always had a positive experience at Red Robin, but I'm glad that everyone at your Red Robin has a good experience.
Yeah, there you go.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let me understand this. We have X amount of titles being processed in the state of Oregon, 1,000, 20,000. I don't know what the number is. The same number is going to get processed, but we're just going to pick 1 to 5% of them, we're assuming, and move them to the front of the line. And we're going to have to add one full person to process the same amount of titles.
0.75.
Mr. Chair, if I, they're not going to go to the front of the line, they're going to go to a different line to be processed differently than through the regular process so they can get them done quicker. So it's not intended to, and I use the cliche of cutting in the front of the line, but it's not really cutting in front of the line. They'll be removed from the normal stream, as I understand it, and there will be a specific person, that 7.75 FTE, that will do the expedited process for those people so they can get them back quicker in exchange for that $100 fee.
What are the circumstances that someone would want to do that? I mean, in theory, all of us would like to have service faster, but what are the circumstances that would provoke someone to pay the additional fee that's contemplated here to get the title back?
Mr. Chair, our experience in people that are trying to get it quicker, these are people that are paying cash. When you're buying a car and the bank's going to get the title because there's a loan on it, you have no need to get it quickly because the bank gets the title, you don't. So this is somebody who's paying cash for their vehicle. In some cases, it may be somebody who's buying a car for a student that's going off to college and they want him to have the title when he goes off to college. It could be a snowbird that's buying a new RV and getting ready to leave and travel the country and won't be back for several months and doesn't want to have to wait for the title to go to some Dropbox someplace because the title is a secure document. You want to make sure you have control over where that's at. It could be somebody who's purchasing a vehicle specifically to take it out of state and sell it again. It could be somebody that's buying it and going to, because you've got somebody that wants to buy it someplace else, and in order to sell it to the other person, they want to have that title with them when they take it out to sell it. So it is, and DMV's estimated, and it is an estimate on how many people would use this. We think it's probably on the low end rather than the high end. But dealers do have people that are asking for it quicker than the normal three-week process. We don't have any option to do that for them, so we're just trying to provide a customer service option for people that are asking for it.
And Ms. Joyce mentioned that she talked with you about the fact that it was an intentional decision to have titling and not registration. Could you explain why that is?
The title is the secure document. It's the one, you know, you get a temporary registration from the dealership, and that can follow you at a later time, and you've got the documents you need. But when it comes to ownership of the vehicle and, you know, whether you're going to transfer it to somebody else or whether you want to secure that before you leave, I mean, that is the document that proves who owns the vehicle. So the customers aren't as concerned about the registration portion of it as they are the actual title.
So what is someone, the snowbird that you mentioned, who's concerned about having the title quickly so they can leave, what do they do for the registration?
They have a temporary registration that they get from DMV.
What about the permanent one that comes on the regular schedule? Where does that go?
It would probably, people that are snowbirds, they have, if they're going down to Arizona where they're going, they would probably have an address down there. But if they got the safety deposit box at the bank here at home, which is where they want to put the title, they would want to secure that before they left. And again, the registration, if it followed them down there, because the registration is going to stay with the vehicle. People generally don't keep the title with the vehicle unless they're traveling it with it to sell. So if you're going to get that title and you want to secure that title in a safety deposit box or put it someplace secure before you go or do whatever you're going to want to do, you're going to wait for that title to come before you leave. You can travel and let the registration follow you later on because that's something you generally keep with the vehicle wherever it's going.
Thanks, Chair. You mentioned the analogy to expedited shipping, but I think to bring things into the public sector, we probably do have some analogies in the government already. One that I'm thinking of is passports. You can pay an extra $60 and get an expedited passport. I think, in fact, most of us end up doing that because we realize our passport is expired and then you need it in 2 days. Are there other examples that you know or either of you know that the state's already doing this for other customer service?
Mr. Representative Davis, I didn't research that. That would be an interesting thing to research, but I think there probably are other sectors of government that probably have that option.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think.
Thank you.
Representative Mr. Chair, I want to be really clear. I am okay with the policy here. I think it's a great policy. My concern is efficiencies within the system of the people who are administering this policy. I want to be very clear about that. Thank you.
Understood. Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just seemed to me that that is the question. Is the current 30-day wait or whatever it is normal and not a reflection of inefficiency? I heard that it's normal and anticipated, and that this indeed, that being the case, this indeed is a new service not a reflection of a lack of efficiency under the current system, but instead a new service. That's the, so the question is, and I think you made that point, Mr. Fuller, when you first sat down, that you were not unhappy, or the dealers, people in general, are not unhappy, because in the normal course, you don't need a title that quickly.
Yeah,
so
Mr.
there
Chair.
Isn't any huge pressure. Am I catching the foundation for your argument appropriately?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, that's correct. I don't know how DMV in Oregon compares to other states. Ms. Joyce may know that. I know the three-week process they have, or just under 3 weeks, is, seems to me a pretty reasonable amount of time for titles that are coming from all over the state and being processed. There are, have been times in the past when DMV has been a lot slower than that, and they're the efficiencies that they've done to bring them into the 19 or 20-day process, I think, is to expect much more than that without a significant change in resources, or maybe even a change in their computer system, might be a bit much to expect.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Cameron?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be real clear again. I'm very satisfied with getting a title in 21 days. My concern is now we're going to do 5% less titles in the existing system. We're not going to reduce any FTEs, but we're going to add an FTE to put those 5% over into a special category. That's my concern. I'm not in Ways and Means, but that's, I want to be real clear what I'm saying here.
Understood.
Thank you.
Other discussion? Questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much. You two are the only two who have signed up to testify on Senate Bill 612. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 612?
Your green cloth.
Don't see anyone.
So I'm so
close
right
the public
now.
Hearing on Senate Bill 612. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3137. Troy, can you remind us of that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 3137 permits person to provide Department of Transportation with odometer reading for vehicle 10 years or older, requires upon transfer of any interest in the motor vehicle an odometer disclosure statement that shall be made by the transferor to the transferee, requires department to keep two most recent odometer records in electronic form. We have amendments, Mr. Chairman, the dash one, which modifies the language regarding version of the records required. We are in possession of the dash one fiscal and the dash one revenue.
What are we talking about?
All the documents are in possession.
Very good. Thank you.
3137.
Representative Nathanson, it's your bill. We have the dash one amendments. Would you like to explain the intent and any, make any other comments on the bill?
sorry.
No problem.
It's
been a while since we've heard this, so I want to give you a chance to remind us of your intention and the amendments, which I think just deal with the
yes. So you closed the public hearing on
right.
612, just to clarify, and we're on 3137.
That's right. We're work session on 3137. Correct.
And I was, as fast as you were doing the gavel, I was looking up to see expedited title processing in Illinois and California. That's why it's taking me a minute to get back to 3137.
So we have the dash one amendments in front of us that have to do with removing two most recent records and inserting most recent version.
Right. Right, and I recommend that. It's really a technical thing. There was a misunderstanding, actually, on whether it was two records or one. This is the way it should be. It's the way it should work. It's more like fixing a drafting error. It's not trying to change policy.
Very good. So the dash one amendments before us. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3137.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3137. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Benz.
Chair, I move House Bill 3137 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. House Bill Representative Benz moves House Bill 3137 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none. Motion carries. House Bill 3137 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Nathanson, I assume you'd be willing to carry?
Happy to. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson will carry it. Close the work session on House Bill 3137. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3443. Representative Davis, do you want to go around and explain it to us?
Absolutely. And I've got handouts for you guys.
Appreciate the enthusiasm.
People are enthusiastic about this bill.
Okay.
I'm excited.
It's great. Thank you. Troy, while he's going around, would you give us a summary, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 3443 requires the Environmental Quality Commission to prepare certain revisions to Oregon State's implementation plan under Federal Clean Air Act, declares emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you, sir.
We have the Dash 2 amendments before us. I'll let Representative Davis speak to the Dash 2 amendments. We are in possession of all of the required paperwork. The Dash 2 amendments, the Dash 2 fiscal, and the Dash 2 revenue have just arrived.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I am John Davis, state representative, and I bring this bill to you enthusiastically with the vein that we might be able to disprove the time-honored complaint that once government starts doing something, particularly if it involves our money, the government won't ever stop. And that comes from actually the second page of the handout that I gave you, talking about Washington's changes to their emissions quality testing. I am talking about the Dash 2 amendments, so disregard the original bill. This concept came to me actually through a Malcolm Gladwell book and one of his essays in that book. What the Dog Saw, I believe. It's
the collection of New Yorker.
Yeah, I think it's a collection of New York articles talking about how such a small percentage, especially of newer vehicles, actually fail emissions testing, and yet we still have 100% of those vehicles tested. And the article went on to discuss Colorado and the methods that they're using. They're currently employing mobile testing stations on freeway exits. So you have two options. You can either go into your DEQ and get tested, or if you happen to take one of these on-ramps, and you go within the cones, and they test you as you drive through, the mobile testing station can certify, without you ever stopping, that you passed your DEQ test. Pretty incredible thing. So this bill, unfortunately, does not adopt that mobile testing station, but I'd like to start moving in that direction. Reading the article, I started looking into some data about our current testing standard, which you have before you. This is provided by DEQ. It's updated as of a few weeks ago. As you will see, vehicles 2008 model year and newer are failing our vehicle inspection program at less than a 1% rate. And those that do fail, I would surmise, are probably maybe very close to the border of failing because they are newer vehicles. And yet, despite less than one out of every 100 of these vehicles failing, 100% of the vehicles are being tested for vehicle emission standards. I approached this bill wanting to look at the data, the evidence, and take a collaborative approach. I've taken the time to meet with AOI, DEQ on a number of occasions, the Oregon Environmental Council. This body has heard numerous proposals over the last few years about let's just get rid of vehicle testing altogether, and life nor government is that easy, as we all understand. And so a little bit of background on the program. You'll hear more from DEQ about some of the technicalities of this. But this is an instance of an agreement that the state of Oregon has with the federal government as to our overall emission standards in the Portland and the Rogue Valley areas. And within those standards that have been established by the federal government, we have agreed, the state of Oregon, to run the vehicle inspection program according to the way we currently run it. So although we might love to just snap our fingers and change the intervals at which vehicles have to be tested, we are under an agreement that will be discussed more with the federal government. A lot of this is about timing. It's about when we're going to make these changes, and that's where the Dash 2s come to you. The proposal that I've put forth is that currently, when you buy a new vehicle in Oregon, it is exempt from vehicle testing for the first 4 years. This bill, once implemented, would extend that to 6 years. So instead of the first 4 years, the first 6 years. After that, you'd still be on a two-year test cycle. So it wouldn't change anything except for that first six-year period. We've already seen data in front of you that shows that very few vehicles in that frame fail. We are going to see less and less, in my opinion, as the federal CAFE standards for mileage come into effect and as vehicles become more and more clean, just by becoming more and more clean. So I think those numbers will ratchet down. And it would take a number of years for this to actually be implemented, so those numbers will be improving before the implementation. The Dash 2s have some funny dates in them. You'll note that the bill, if adopted with the Dash 2s, would not become effective law until after our 2014 session. I think the bill dash two say May 1st or March 1st, 2014, and they wouldn't require DEQ to renegotiate its agreement with the federal government until July 1st, 2014. So why would we have a law that's not going to be implemented until after our next session? It's because of the federal government. They're going to be coming down with new ozone standards for the state of Oregon, hopefully in early 2014, hopefully. At that time, regardless of this bill, regardless of the policy that we give DEQ, they will be renegotiating that agreement. So that's labor that's already going to be taking place. It's my hope that we would express a legislative intent that we take the burden off approximately 52,000 vehicles in that two model year period that would no longer have to be tested. Let's say 2014 comes, we're running up on February, and DEQ has not yet given us the standards. My intent was that we would bump that date back again until after the 2015 session so that we wouldn't be in a position of having to run the test twice, which I think is one of the concerns that DEQ might bring to us today, is if we adopt the dash twos, the federal government doesn't bring us those new standards in time, we're going to have to rerun our emissions models first to implement this, and once again to implement the new standards once the federal government brings them down. So it's my intent to time this out correctly in such a way that DEQ would not have to duplicate this work. And really, I think it's an opportunity. At first, I was disheartened to know that we couldn't do this right away, but then I got to thinking, we're going to have to do this anyway. We're going to have to do this anyway, and the legislature, as the body which directs, creates policy, and asks our agencies to do certain things, this is a wonderful time for us to say, looking at the data in front of us, we don't believe these 2 years of vehicles should be tested, so when you do your next modeling, take that into account. That's sort of the scope of the bill. I'd be happy to take questions because I realize that is a bit technical, and a DEQ, I believe, is going to testify, and a few others about some of the wrinkles to this. Does that make sense?
You've done a good job summarizing.
Thank you. And just a quick note, on the back you'll see what are other states doing. Colorado, they just recently changed their new vehicle exemption from 4 years to 7 years, so they're doing a very similar thing. That will come into effect in 2015. And the second little article from the Columbian out of Vancouver talks about the fact that vehicle emission testing in the state of Washington is going to be phased out altogether, completely, by 2020. That's going to be a phase out over the next 7 years. So those are two things that other states are doing, and I would hope that we could join them based on science and keeping our environment clean. Oh, and I would note, on Monday, when we were originally going to hear this bill, I wore a green shirt and a green tie to express how green I am and how much I love the state. But today, I had to wear this.
But today, there you are.
We assume that your sentiments have not changed with your apparel.
They have. Yeah. Monday is my green day.
You got it.
Oregon State has a nuclear.
Representative Doherty. Yeah.
Well, I would just hope those of us whose place expire next month who live in the DEQ area, can you get the mobile thing here earlier down to Salem?
He did say he wanted to move in that direction.
Yeah, I think
because we're having a heck of a time to get to DEQ and try to get our license plates, and of course all of the legislators want to follow the laws. So
you know,
there's no chance of having a mobile thing here between now and May 30th.
No, but thank you, because that brings up a point, Representative Doherty, that I wanted to bring up. According to these numbers, approximately 52,000 vehicles that have to be tested in that four-year period would be exempt. And just doing some rough back-of-the-napkin numbers, that's if it takes you an hour to get to DEQ and back, my DEQ station's about 10 miles, so it takes about an hour round trip, and yours is, I think, 5 miles or so. Just say it saves an hour. That's 52,000 hours saved. It costs an average of $15 for your DEQ fee. It's $19 in the Portland area. It's $10 down in the Rogue Valley. That would be $780,000 fees saved for Oregonians. So.
Thank you. Representative Bitts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there was a bill similar to this brought some years ago, and I think the response, if I remember correctly, and I may not, was that soon the standards would be raised, and thus the failure rate would increase with those standards. What's the proper response to that? Because I may be thinking of some other testing program, but are we looking at some sort of increase in the types of standards these automobiles must meet that would make these outcomes less likely?
And representatives, feel free, obviously, answer however you like, but remember that we have some other folks testifying behind you.
That's a good question for DEQ, but I will note three things. Two of them I've already noted. One is the CAFE standards, which are going to make the vehicles more efficient. The second are the fact that vehicles are becoming more efficient in general. And the third piece, the piece of news that came out, I think, about 2 weeks ago, which is the federal government requiring cleaner fuels themselves from petroleum companies to go into the vehicles, which will produce less emissions. So three factors, at least on the input side, that are going to reduce emissions. DEQ can talk more about the federal mandates for the standards as a state.
One last question, please. Thank you. What is the normal cost per driver for this test?
It is $15 average. It's $19 per vehicle. Excuse me, not per driver. $19 in Portland, $10 in Rogue Valley.
And how much time does it take?
About an hour. I mean, some people, my wife recently did it in 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Took me an hour and 15 when I did it last year.
I keep forgetting that those of our colleagues not in the metro area and Rogue Valley don't have this pleasure. There's high variability in how much time it takes.
That piece that DMV was talking about with depends on what time of day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Depends on what time of day.
Absolutely. It entirely does. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, but Representative Davis, you can go in on Saturday. Or you can go in on Wednesday night. Except for in Medford.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. Other questions? Thank you, Representative Davis.
Thank you.
We have four people to testify, three of whom are agency folks. So, Mr. Hauser, would you like to go first, and then we'll call up the agency folks? You came in uniform, we see.
Got to acknowledge the uniform.
Absolutely. And I hope I have not mispronounced your last name.
Hauser.
Yes. Very good.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chair Tobias, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hauser. I live at 3340 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland, and my business is Hawthorne Auto Clinic at 4307 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. I am here today representing my business and also representing the 500 members of the Northwest Automotive Trades Association. Hawthorne Auto Clinic is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. And for those 30 years, we have, and even personally before we started our business, we have performed emission repairs in the state of Oregon. Some things I can say, over 80% of air pollution problems are still generated by automobiles. The modern cars are cleaner, but that improvement to air quality is based on the equipment continuing to function properly. There are more components that make that happen, and those components do fail. I can tell you that we have weekly, if not daily, customers coming to us clutching their DMV renewal forms and begging us to turn out the light, to the malfunction indicator light, the check engine light, that they've been driving around with that light on, and they know that they're not going to pass with that light on, and they need that resolved. And that's our job. Part of the vehicle, the DEQ VIP program, is to encourage people to perform that maintenance and to get those cars corrected, and that's our job, is to do that.
Not just to turn the light out.
Just to turn the light out, because DEQ can tell you how many people go to AutoZone and get the light turned out, and then they go in and find that they failed because the self-test called the monitors haven't run, and then it's even more difficult the next time they go to DEQ because they'll have extra requirements they're going to have to meet relative to the monitors that hadn't run. So I'm concerned about this proposal for two reasons. One is that the numbers you see about the low number of cars that are failing in large measure are due to people who grab that registration form, re-registration form, and come to us and get it fixed before they ever go in because they know it's not going to pass with that light on. So I don't believe those numbers correct that you see of failures correctly represent what's going on the month or 2 months prior to their visit to DEQ. The other concern I have is that for practical purposes, this program will move the point at which cars do go in for testing from the current 4, 5, or 6 years to 7 or 8 years since they're tested every other year. The current manufacturer's emission warranty for the two most expensive emission components, the catalytic converter and the car's computer, are 8 years, 80,000 miles. With this proposal, many, many cars are going to be over, they're going to be bumping up against 8 years and over 80,000 miles, which means that $1,600 catalytic converter or that $2,400 computer that has turned that check engine light on is now going to be the responsibility of the car owner and not the manufacturer under the emissions warranty. So you're going to be creating a considerable extra expense for consumers by allowing them to continue to drive with that check engine light on until they have to go in at 8 years. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. You. We appreciate it. Before you take off, let's see if there are any questions. We appreciate you coming. And
thank you.
Palmer Mason, Andy Ginsberg, and Amy Joyce, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davis.
I just note for the committee's benefit, I don't know if there's a Mr. Anderson testifying, but he did submit testimony last on Monday, which has a Wikipedia article on vehicle inspection programs throughout the United States, and it lists, at least as accurate as Wikipedia is, it lists all the states and what they're currently doing. So if you'd like to compare, that's on OLIS.
Thank you for pointing that out. We don't have Mr. Anderson signed up, so we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Who's first?
I think DEQ is. Okay. Representative Reed, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the government relations manager with DEQ. We're here to testify on House Bill 3443, the -2 amendment. I have with me Andy Ginsberg. He's the air quality administrator for the department. He's going to provide the bulk of our testimony. But before we get started, I did want to start by publicly recognizing that Representative Reed has had an open-door policy on this bill. He's met with us several times to talk about the issues, and he has been true to his word in trying to look at the data, the information to...
Did you mean Representative Davis?
I meant Representative Davis.
I've talked to you about it, but not that much.
I will note that Representative Reed is a co-sponsor, so as are many of you on the committee. But
I'm looking right at you, but thinking about Representative Davis. Sorry, Representative Davis. I apologize about that. So, no, I'm talking about Representative Davis, just to be clear. He has had an open-door policy, and he has met with us, so I want to publicly thank him for that, and he has tried to look at the information. And I will also acknowledge that if you were to look at the bill and look at this amendment, there has been progress on the issues that DEQ has raised. We still have concerns, which we've spoken to Representative Davis about, and so we're here to share that with the committee. But I did want to publicly acknowledge his good efforts and thank him for that.
Thank you. Mr. Ginsberg?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Andy Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator at DEQ. And as Palmer mentioned, we're here to provide some information, express our concerns about the -2 amendments to 3443. As you know, this bill would change the initial start date for testing. And then it would require us to analyze the air quality impacts. And as Representative Davis explained, we would be submitting that to EPA for approval July 1, 2014. So first, let me assure you that DEQ agrees it's important to periodically evaluate our programs and to eliminate requirements when they're no longer needed. And we actually have a track record of doing that with the oxygenated gasoline program. Once we met the carbon monoxide standards, we eliminated that program. And last year I committed to do a review just like that for the vehicle inspection program in testimony to the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water regarding House Bill 4112. And that would look at all aspects of the vehicle inspection program, including the initial test year. Last month, I repeated that commitment to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee regarding Senate Bill 212. So I would like to describe a little bit about what that commitment is. But before that, I just want to give a little brief background about the vehicle inspection program. So the main purpose of vehicle inspection is to reduce the pollutants that cause smog or ozone and to meet the federal air quality standard in the Portland and Medford areas. Cars are among our top emitters of smog-forming pollutants, and they were the largest part of our strategy to meet the federal standard. Violating the federal standard not only affects public health, it also affects businesses because it makes it harder for industrial businesses to expand in those areas that are violating federal standards. And this is particularly important because, as Representative Davis mentioned, EPA is looking at the ozone standard now, and they have announced that they plan to propose a new standard sometime towards the end of this year, and to adopt a new standard sometime towards the end of 2014, although they have not met their deadlines recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if it spills into 2015. But at the levels that they've proposed in the past, or that they're considering, their science committee has considered, Oregon could easily go back into non-attainment with the standard, or we might be hovering just below that line of attainment. So before we can evaluate changes to any of the key strategies in our ozone plan, we really need to know what that standard is, because otherwise we might be relaxing one standard only to have to tighten standards on other emission sources such as industry. Currently, vehicles in Portland and Medford are required to be tested at their first re-registration, which usually happens when a vehicle is about 4 years old. There are some exceptions, which I can explain if you would like. Oregon already exempts more years than most states. Of the 32 states that do testing programs, 60% or 19 states exempt either 1, 2, or 3 years from the test. 30% or 9 states exempt 4 years, like Oregon, and only 4 states exempt either 5 or 6 years. So why do 90% of the states exempt 4 or fewer model years from testing when these cars are so clean? Well, as you heard from Mr. Hauser, the new cars are clean because they have a lot of equipment on them that keeps them clean, and that equipment needs to be maintained. And while those systems tend to fail more as vehicles age, even new cars can have failures, and that can occur because they have either faulty parts or faulty computer systems, and also because new cars are driven many, many more miles than older cars. And national studies and our own research show that without vehicle inspection, many of these critical repairs are delayed or not done at all, causing emissions to go up. The most important message that I'd like to leave you with today, Jim Hauser already mentioned, so I'll say it briefly, is the purpose of the vehicle inspection program is to prevent failures, not to catch failures. And because of the check engine light, or that dashboard light that Mr. Hauser was mentioning, motorists know they can't pass the test with the light on, and so they go and get maintenance before they come in to be tested. When we query the cars of the computers on the cars to find out when those codes were last reset, we find that approximately 20% of the vehicles were repaired after they got their registration renewal notice from DMV, which happens 3 months before the registration expires and before the test. And in fact, 10% or half of those had their repairs done within 1 month of the test. So we know that those repairs could range from anything from replacing a battery to replacing a catalytic converter. They're not all directly related to emissions, but we clearly see the test leading to preventative maintenance, and that's the purpose. So the bottom line is that the program results in preventative maintenance. It reduces the number of cars that fail the test, but not the benefit of the test, which is providing that incentive for maintenance. So now back to our commitment. Because, as Representative Davis mentioned, the vehicle inspection program is part of our federally approved plan to meet the ozone standard, we need to demonstrate to EPA that any changes to the program will not cause violations of the standard. That process starts, we can't just look at the vehicle inspection program in isolation. We need to look at all emission sources that contribute to ozone. So that process starts with a comprehensive inventory of emissions from vehicles and businesses and other sources. And then we have to run a computer model where we analyze what those emissions would lead to in terms of air pollution, because ozone is a photochemical reaction that occurs in the atmosphere. We compare those results to the proposed federal standard, which, as I mentioned, will likely be more stringent after 2014. And if we project violations, then we'll need additional strategies. If we project that we have some room, then we can look at removing or changing strategies and test that. And as I mentioned, that assessment will absolutely include looking at the vehicle inspection program, everything from whether we need to continue testing at all to other details such as the test boundary and how many years are subject to testing. The issue is that once we start this work, it will take us about 18 months to do. It's a very complex analysis. It will take EPA up to 18 months to approve it after we submit it to them. And because it's a costly analysis, our hope is to do it only once. And because we expect the ozone standard to be finalized sometime in late 2014 or perhaps early 2015, our plan has been to do this analysis during the 2015 to 16 timeframe after the new standard is final and before our ozone plan expires. And I do appreciate Representative Davis' focus on the timing of this, because that's the key part. The issue is that in order to get our analysis done, because we've got this 18-month lead time to do the work, it wouldn't really be possible to get it done on the time frame in the Dash 2. Mm-hmm. So that's the main issue, is just the timing. Also, in order to do this ahead of schedule, because all the staff that would be working on this will be fully committed on other work, to do this work early, we would need new temporary staff to do it. We're estimating it would take three FTE about a year to do this work if we did it ahead of schedule at a cost of around $337,000. If we do it when it's normally scheduled, then existing staff would be doing it. If EPA approves the change, then we would also see our fee revenue decrease by about $8.6 million per biennium. Also, funding from DMB would decline because we currently do registration approval for something like 80% of the vehicles that we test. So, in other words, DMB pays us to do the registration work for them. And they would obviously stop paying us because they would have to take on the work themselves, and they would probably need additional staff to do that work. So to offset this loss of test revenue, we would, of course, have lower testing volume so that we could reduce staff, and that would save some of the cost. We would also have to close some stations to reduce overhead, and that would affect customer service. People might have to drive further to get to a test. And because we would have a smaller volume of tests, we would have to spread that overhead over a smaller number of vehicles, which could potentially lead down the road to a need for a fee increase. So again, while we understand the intent of the Dash 2 amendment, we believe the best time to do this review is after EPA has finalized the ozone standard. Our current plan is to do that work during the 2015 to 16 timeframe. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We might have some. Representative Betts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andy, we've had these conversations before in all kinds of different situations, but I'm interested in how many cars a year are tested in the Portland area, a round number?
About a million. Or about 500,000 per year.
And the concern, of course, is each one of those people spending an hour, at whatever cost that is. The concern is each of those 500,000 cars driving down to this test. The concern is the cost versus the benefit, which we've a constant refrain from me, is how much is this costing to what benefit? And so do we have those numbers? Do we have the cost to those who are driving in? The mileage to get there, how much fuel they burn getting there, how much fuel they burn waiting, driving around the block, and the corresponding benefit. Do we have that for this particular, as opposed to all of these outside things that force us to keep doing this program, how much money we might lose, where the EPA is? I didn't hear one word about the cost to the person driving that car. I didn't hear one word. So to me, that's a really important piece that needs to be in the study, and perhaps it is. I'm hoping to hear that from you.
Chair Reed, Representative Benz, I don't have that information to give you right now. I can tell you that the time that it takes to do the test, of course, most of that is getting to the station, because once you're at our station, our average wait time is about 8 minutes. I know there are times when people wait longer if they tend to wait till the end of the month and come on a very busy day. And we do actually have a webcam on each of our lanes so people can see what the lines are like. Our plan is in the near future to also post the wait time, the current real-time wait time on the web. So we're doing what we can to minimize that cost, but obviously the time for people to get there is a cost for people.
I can't get the webcam.
And The benefit, though, is by meeting the ozone standard, we are able to have much less cost on industrial growth and expansion in Portland and Medford areas. If we violate the ozone standards, then industrial companies have to offset any emission increase they have by reducing emissions from existing businesses that are within the area, which can be very, very expensive, and they have to put on very expensive control technology. So as we looked at when we adopted the program in the first place, and every time we've evaluated, it has a great cost benefit with regard to the overall overall economy when you consider the business benefit as well of meeting air quality standards. But when we do this analysis, I will commit to you here that we will include all of those costs that from the driver's perspective of coming through the test.
So you said the 8 minutes. What's the median?
What's the, pardon?
The median time.
The median time? I don't have that number, but we have a lot of statistics we've been collecting, and I can absolutely get that to you tomorrow.
It's not a huge deal. It's just very interesting. If 8 minutes is the mean, I've definitely waited a lot longer than that. So it would be interesting to see what the median is. If that's the mean, I'm guessing there are some that are way longer than that to get, and some must be much longer.
Chair Reed, there are times when the waits are longer. We typically find that people will wait until the end of the month when their registration is due.
Yeah.
And so we tend to get long lines then. We are open on Saturdays, but as a result, we're closed on Mondays, so Tuesdays tend to be a very heavy volume day. And so we do what we can to try and get the word out and encourage people to come at lower wait times. But when we measure, we measure the time from when someone is in line at the station until they get through the station, and our average now is 8 minutes, and we've been working constantly to improve that.
Very good. You may have said it in a place I missed it, but I remember you mentioning a commitment you made last year and another commitment you made last month. What happened between?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
You mentioned that you made a commitment to sort of a complete review in testimony last year.
Yes.
And then that you renewed that commitment last month. I think I missed what happened between.
I'm sorry. Chair Reed, the commitment was to do this analysis in 2015 to 2016,
okay,
after we have the final ozone standards. So
okay,
we have done some preliminary work already, but we can't make much progress on doing this work until we have the new ozone standard. We are beginning to work with the models that we'll be using during that analysis. EPA has switched their emission models from vehicles from one generation to the next, and our staff are being trained in that now and beginning to run the model so we can get up to speed on it. But in terms of doing the actual analysis, it will begin with a comprehensive emission inventory that we'll do in a future year.
Other questions? Representative Cameron?
And Mr. Chair, we're trying to get to your cams. We can't see them.
We're on iPads. So.
Follow up, if I may.
You want some direction, maybe? He can. You found them, you just can't see them? On the link?
Well, I can't see the cameras because I'm not standing there, but when you push on the link, it doesn't show up on our iPads.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On any of them. Follow up, if I may.
Go ahead.
Your service hours. Reasons you're open on weekends and late at nights. Can you talk about why you do that?
Yes. So, Chair Representative Cameron, we were actually directed by statute to have evening hours, although we think it's a very good idea to do. Most people do come through during normal working hours, but some people are unable to visit our stations during normal business hours. Because probably of their own work commitments, and so we have established weekend hours and evening hours so that people can get to our stations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? President Davis?
Just a practical note, and I understand we haven't heard from Ms. Joyce yet, but I know DMV is trying to implement more and more online renewals.
I can't find a fee either.
Preventing the need to go into either DMV or DEQ, and if you have received a notice of renewal, and it also often has a helpful go online and renew, but then there's also often a slip in there that says, oop, but you can't because you need to go into DEQ. So one of the burden shifts that this would do is instead of just moving people from DEQ or DMV offices, it would move them online completely. So
And Chair, Representative Davis, if I could just mention also that we are working on technology that would get at exactly what you're talking about. Now that the test is highly computerized, we're essentially querying the car's computer to determine which emission components are failing. There's really no need for someone to come actually into a test center. We currently have developed a self-service test booth where you can scan your vehicle and you can plug yourself into the computer system and get a download, and this booth will actually, if you pass the test, print out a DMV registration. We have one that's operating right now. It's at one of our test centers, and we're not ready yet to deploy those in unsecure locations, but that technology is coming along. Our next interest is in finding a way to allow people to download their data to us over the internet so that they won't have to actually drive to the station at all. This technology is all possible, and I think that in the long run it's the way we're going to have to be doing testing rather than having people come to test centers. Now, not everyone's going to want to do that. Not everyone wants to do the self-service checkout at Fred Meyer's or at Home Depot, but it's an option that we do have available and that we're developing.
That's very interesting. It prompts me to wonder whether you're having any communication with Mr. Witte and the road use charge technology that also has to do with data being reported wirelessly. Are they connected wirelessly?
Chair Reed, we haven't made that connection yet, but that's an excellent point.
Representative Cameron?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. You shared a little bit about this remote equipment, or how are you referring to it?
Well, yeah, we call it remote onboard diagnostics testing or remote OBD testing. So basically, there's a standardized plug-in on a car that was built in 1996 or later, where we plug into to download data from the computer about which, and it basically tracks which emission control components have failed or are failing. And
I assume
so,
it's the same port that the participants in the pilot project on the road use charge used. Mm-hmm. Is it the same one?
I don't know the answer to that question. Is that the same port? So right now, the only way to get that test is to come to a DEQ station, and either we plug in to the system or you can do a self-service test, but you're doing it at a DEQ station. We have designed a little box, essentially, that would plug in and could potentially stay plugged in, that you could then unplug when your test is due and take it upstairs and plug it into a USB port and transmit the data to us. Mm-hmm. Or potentially we're looking, and the problem with that approach is that little box is expensive, so it wouldn't at this point pencil out for someone to purchase one in lieu of coming in for a test every other year.
Which is why it may, I'm totally theorizing here, but it may make sense to try to integrate that with the road use charge if that goes forward, so that you could have both of those things in one box.
Since I'm never wanting to pay a road use charge, Mr. Hauser sitting behind you, could this box potentially be purchased by somebody like Mr. Hauser in his repair shop and plugged into a vehicle to get the data and then upload it to DEQ?
Chair Reed, Representative Cameron, we're looking at options like that. We're not especially, and with all due respect to Mr. Hauser, we're not all that interested in doing it at repair shops because we want to keep a little separation between the testing and the repair. But there are other options we're looking at to deploy these out in the private sector where we could have people come and be tested. It's if we have testing and repair done at the same facility, it creates a credibility problem from the consumer standpoint and potentially even fraud. As a result, EPA requires that type of a system to have a very expensive oversight by the state. So, but the point is well taken. If we can get, if we can find ways to get these devices out there, then we can. There's many configurations as you can see. And right now, we have the basic technology working, and we are exploring what are the possibilities for deploying it.
Thank you.
Ms. Joyce, my apologies that we kind of got sidetracked on questions, but we're happy to hear from you as well.
Not at all, Chair Reed. An interesting conversation, to be sure. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, really here just today to provide a little bit of information, which the gentlemen from DEQ really have done a good job. I was surprised to learn earlier this session that when I was called into a legislator's office who didn't even know that DMV had any connection with the DEQ system. So I'm here today simply to provide a little bit of information, particularly for those of you who live outside the area. So DMV and DEQ work and have worked for years together on efficiencies where folks who go to DEQ can get their registration renewed right there. They pay for their renewal tags. The tag spits out. They're even into this self-serve kiosk now that works quite well, so that that transaction can be done seamlessly. So as the discussions go forward, I just, again, informational for folks to keep in mind that changes to DEQ's system will mean changes to DMV's system as well.
Good. Questions from Ms. Joyce? Thank you very much for your testimony. That's the list of people who have signed up. I know there's some other people in the room who are interested in this bill. Is there anyone else who wants to testify?
Representative Reed, I can report back as I'm at the Sherwood Emission Station tomorrow at 8:30 on a Thursday, which is supposed to be less. I'll let you know how long I had to wait for it.
Your field
okay, that'll be a. But you can renew your driver, your tags right
one.
There. So
yes. Okay, well, it saves you a size of one.
Yes,
appreciate that.
It saves you a trip to DMV.
Make sure you share that information with Representative Cameron too, since we can't see the video or the cameras at the moment.
8:30 tomorrow. Look on this. You'll see my car.
He may have other plans.
Are you going to wave at the camera?
Bruce Ford, I'll wave at you.
That's very good. So with no one else seeking the opportunity to testify, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3443 and open a work session on House Bill 3443.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3443.
Thank you. Representative Davis moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3443. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted. Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3443 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Davis moves House Bill 3443 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. House Bill 3443 goes to the floor and on to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3443. And open work session on House Bill 2428.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 2428 establishes process for issuance of certificate of approval for operating autonomous vehicles on highways of state, prescribes vehicle and operator requirements for autonomous vehicles. Mr. Chairman, we are in possession of the Dash 1 amendments. The legislative fiscal impact statement for Dash 1, revenue Dash 1, and once again, the amendments for Dash 1.
Thank you. We have ODOT here, Ms. Bohard, if you might like to come up and talk to us a little bit about it. The Dash 1 amendments, as I read them, are essentially a direction to the department to do a study. And I'd like particularly to hear from Ms. Bohard about how a study might be done, whether a bill is needed, what sort of opportunities exist to study this emerging opportunity.
Good afternoon. For the record, Jerry Bohard. I'm the Transportation Development Division Administrator for the Oregon Department of Transportation. It is possible to do research such as this. We have a research program that's actually part of my division. And in fact, we recently, we have a research advisory committee that actually selects projects, and we do it about 6 months in front of the biennium. And we recently selected a project a little bit different than the bill that you have in front of you, but it was about preparing a possible Oregon roadmap for connected vehicles. Cooperative system deployment scenarios. So it's recognition that we do need to get out kind of ahead of what's going on relative to connected vehicles. A little bit different than your bill. Connected vehicles is more about, I think many of you know that a number of automobiles now can sense a bumper and reduce its speed and that sort of thing. And what this roadmap really would be doing would be looking at what do we need to do for our infrastructure in order to be prepared and actually take advantage of those types of changes that are happening to the vehicle. So we actually see kind of the connected vehicles as being some of the next stage. We already have a principal investigator who's going to be doing this effort, Robert Bertini. He comes from Portland State University. He actually was on a sabbatical, for lack of a better word, federal highways with regards to their ITS, intelligent transportation systems, and the connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles work. So he was in D.C. for about a year doing that. One of the things that we'll be doing as part of this effort is a literature review. And a literature review, really, we will be looking at what is out there, what do the trends show relative to connected vehicles and autonomous vehicles. So I think that is the one really probably key part of what's in this existing legislation that would be part of this research effort. Typically, our research efforts, again, this one will be starting next biennium, assuming that our budget goes through, and usually takes about 2 years to do. So,
thank you.
I hope that's the information you were looking for, Chair.
That's very helpful. Is there any discussion? Representative Doherty.
Okay, so does basically you could do something very similar to this without us passing a law on it, or without
Chair
giving
Reed,
directive for being that specific?
I think we come fairly close to what's in the bill. The research does not get into the policy discussion, and there's a number of recommendations in here relative to legislation. So I think we would be providing good factual information for either ODOT staff or the legislature to look at and provide some additional direction. So clearly research doesn't get into that policy direction. So a good half of it probably.
Okay.
So one of the things that interests me about this bill, if it were to go forward, is it comes from my experience on a bill on a completely unrelated topic, but it was a new technology, a new approach, and as we got into the discussion in the legislature, all sorts of issues that at least I and maybe others had not anticipated seemed to pop up. So the idea that these may be substantially into the future just gives me interest in trying to anticipate what are the issues, what are the things that the legislature might someday have to grapple with, independent of what the legislature or a future legislature might decide. Is it reasonable to assume that your description of sort of factual information is likely to include that sort of thing? And perhaps it's as simple as identifying what other states are doing, other countries, and that sort of thing?
Chair Reed, yes, in fact, so I have kind of the two-pager. And again, we haven't finalized the work plan, so this information we'll be sharing and augmenting. But we do talk about doing a inventory of global and state connected vehicle applications and capacity through a detailed literature review. So we recognize we need to not only look statewide, but also internationally. And really, it is around final recommendations about scenarios for implementation. So what is it going to take to get us to where we want to go? So I think very much so that this probably does align with what you're anticipating. I think the emphasis more is on the connected vehicles, but we'll be doing some. Obviously, there's a connection, obviously, to autonomous vehicles as well as connected vehicles. So, but our emphasis is in this research is a little bit more on connected vehicles, but obviously we'll be getting into the other as well.
Well, it seems clear from the testimony we had when we first heard this bill that connected vehicles, and I'm glad to learn that term, it seems reasonable to assume that they're kind of a bridge between our, mm-hmm. our current status and autonomous vehicles.
Right. And Chair Reed, one of the emphasis for doing this is the safety aspect of it. And really, we recognize that the mechanisms that's in there really improves the safety, and obviously for our agency, safety is number one, and that's why we're very interested in this.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd be interested in how you, at the department, maybe you were sitting in on the meetings as you selected this as an area to look into. One of the things that's of unfortunate interest is the concept of a car being utilized like a drone, where you could send the car someplace to blow up. And the concern of cars going places without drivers is huge for that reason alone. And it seems to me as you were sitting down talking about these kinds of things, maybe that crossed people's minds, given this horrible situation in Boston and other things that we're now facing. But these technologies are here. They're here. And so it seems to me that I'm very happy that you sat down and identified this as an area that needed attention, because I believe it does need attention. I think the bill goes too far. I don't think we're ready for policy, but I know the area needs attention, so I'm happy to hear that's what you're doing. But perhaps you could share with us what you're not doing. Were you at those meetings and what you decided you wouldn't look into instead of this?
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz. So our research program, we solicit problem statements and typically get anywhere from 80 to 100 problem statements and come from everything from our own staff to our universities, so just a variety of stakeholders that we work with, and we get problem statements.
We need to know about this. and
we have a number of technical advisory committees, and so everywhere from pavement to construction. The new one we have is emerging issues. And so when these problem statements came in, they are evaluated by our staff, and they prioritize them. And then the ones that kind of come to the top, they each take usually about three or four that come to the top, and those go to our research advisory committee. I am a member of the research advisory committee. We have representatives from OSU, luckily, given the day, and PSU that also sit on the advisory committee as well. And from the about 24 problem statements, what we call second stage problem statements, we select 8 to 10, kind of depending on what the cost of these projects are and what we see our budget is. So at any given time, our research program is doing about 30 research projects. But really what came out of this one is really the recognition when our research advisory committee met is that we needed a group that really said, let's look at what are some of the emerging issues so that we get out ahead of it. I don't think we got to the kind of the drone question that you identified, but I think for our agency, we recognize that technology is going to gain us a lot of efficiencies, and we need to get out ahead of that conversation and take advantage of it. So that's really where I think our emphasis was.
Thank you.
Conversation?
Well, I want to say that I appreciate the effort Representative Gelser went to bring us the bill, and the effort she went to produce the Dash Ones. I remain very interested in the potential. I'm very glad to hear that the department can accomplish much of what I think is encapsulated in the Dash One in terms of its intention. I think given that that assurance and the other priorities we have in the budget, there is a fiscal impact on the Dash One amendments. We need not move that forward. But I do want to say that I remain disappointed by the difficulty in coming to some consensus around how to approach this conversation, this opportunity. I don't think there's anyone here on this committee, and I'm happy to be corrected, who is interested in having anything but a welcoming attitude, an interest in advancing the technology and finding the right balance and making it an opportunity for the whole state, for the country, both in terms of its mobility benefits and its safety benefits, all of those things. I would see no one correcting me. I think that's a safe assumption. So it troubles me, it disappoints me that we're not able to come to something that everybody can be enthusiastic about addressing and moving forward on. But I am hopeful that the work you're going to do, Ms. Bohard, will give us a chance to consider what the legislature needs to do going forward. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Chair. I also just wanted to note that NCSL is, I believe, the Transportation Committee is starting to think about this issue, and as we do, I will be happy to come back and report to the committee. In fact, I'll bring it up at our May meeting in Denver with the other committee members to see what has percolating among other states and if there's any model legislation in mind on this issue as well.
Thank you for that and for the reminder of your role with NCSL. Yeah. Other comments? Representative Gorsuch.
In terms of moving forward, I know that ODOT has a particular perspective, and a lot of it is regulatory.
Just wondered if it would be possible to have something like Business Oregon, which is more interested in innovation. If they could be a part of this in some way.
Well, if we had a if we had a bill, that would certainly be an opportunity to make those suggestions. Other comments?
Thank you.
I think that's it. Close the work session on House Bill 2428. Representative McEwen, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I just wanted to comment that I appreciate your willingness to go back and revisit. I didn't realize that you had a program like this that was already moving forward with some research capability on this, maybe not exactly targeted idea, but close to that targeted idea. And it seems really appropriate that may be the bridge to a bill in the future when this idea is a little more well-formed. And I do like Representative Gorsuch's idea that at some point, when we do move forward with this, which I think we will at some point, that we do bring Business Oregon on the inviting new technology and entrepreneurship into the state and possible business opportunities that may come with that. So I appreciate your willingness to revisit this and work with ODOT on maybe an interim step before we go that full step in actually creating some legislation to deal with this. Thank you.
Chair Reed, we do a technical advisory committee. I don't know exactly what this work program is going to look like, but I will make sure that my research program manager reaches out to Business Oregon to see if they're interested in serving on the technical advisory committee.
And perhaps you could let the committee know when any of your public meetings occur. Some of us might be interested in at least observing.
Chair Reed, they're typically not public, but we can certainly let you know when they're happening.
Thank you. Representative Doherty.
This is just an observation because I'm sure that all of our colleagues in the legislature are watching this as we speak. But the one thing I've noticed, and maybe it would help.
I think they're autonomous drones.
Or whatever. But with so much of the legislation I found out as a chair this year, that maybe it wouldn't hurt to kind of, as a protocol, an informal protocol, is when we come up with bill ideas, is to go to the agencies before we do this to see if something is already in the works. And with a couple of bills, I thought, you know, if I would have gone to this agency or that agency, I would have known that something like this is already going on. As opposed, you're not going to come to us because you don't know what we're thinking. But if we go to the agency, and maybe that's something that down the road we can kind of look at as something both offices want to look at.
Pass a law requiring that.
I suspect people...
I don't want to pass a law.
I suspect anyway, many people don't know what we're thinking even after they talk to us.
That's true.
Any other comments? I don't see any. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2428. And I want to be very deliberate about this since it is our last day before we are done with House bills. Is there anything else to come before the committee? I'm moving very slowly at this point in contrast to the rest of the meeting. So that once the gavel drops, there's no bringing it back up here. Thank you. I'll wait.
Sign my flying cars bill.
Yes, Senate bill. We have 29.
Where's my flying cars bill?
Representative Cameron.
Well, question: did we do 2016? What did we do with that?
2016. We got all the. We did not. We did not do anything with that. That's not going to be no further action on that bill. Okay. Here it goes.
Going once.
One other announcement. We did double, triple, quadruple check. Troy assures me that we have not left anything on the table that we shouldn't. We are going to take Friday off and give our dedicated staff a break. We're sort of reaching the midpoint here, so we'll be moving to Senate bills when we come back on Monday. I hope you all enjoy your Friday off. Representative Cameron?
Yeah, I'd like to amend the representative's bill. She's going to file to require us.
Can you amend it before it exists?
Right, to talk to agencies. I'd like to put an amendment in there that when we have this halftime, that we also take a break for, you know, a week or so before we have to start dealing with all the Senates. Can you put that in your bill?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. That sounds like a friendly amendment.
Sure. I've got amendments too. Like when on the floor, if you say briefly, your clock should shrink down the.
That's Representative Widener.
Well, I won't be on a break. I'll be in a Ways and Means hearing on Friday.
And where is it?
And I would be glad to do that because Representative Cameron and I always agree on everything.
Glad to know that.
That's been very obvious.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'll disagree with you on that statement.
I think we're losing control. We're adjourned.
Thank you, sir.